Blog Talk Radio.
Thank you for joining us at Reform to Freedom Ministries, where we share stories of those who have triumphed over challenges beyond the prison bars. Hear credible testimonies from prison advocates, social activists, and legal experts which can bring impeachment. Join us each Thursday at noon for the latest.
And good morning, and welcome to Reform to Freedom Ministries. Of course, this is your host, Ms. Diane Winbush, and the message should have said it brings impactment, not impeachment. We're not policy and government where we impeach people. So today we have back in the studio with us a very special guest. We are fighting for justice with him, with his advocate team, with his family members, his mom. We're fighting for justice with him in regards to a case that he is fighting that is very, very ridiculous. I know a lot of times that we have to be mindful of things that what we do, and we have to be conscious about things of what we do, but the sentencing in this case is just totally overwhelming and overbearing. And so we continue to be able to highlight offenders or alleged offenders on our show in order to be able to bring a little bit more concept of what they're going through as to them sharing their stories with the public. So welcome to the studio, Mr. Marquis Claudy Sr. So good morning on my side and good afternoon on your time zone.
Good afternoon, Mrs. Winbush. How's everything going?
I am doing great. I'm doing great. Thank you so much for joining us on today. And so we're going to kind of do a little small summary of when we had you on the show prior and what have you, and which we've just done that. And so we want to get into to the next segment or to the next phase of your release. We're still believing God that this is going to be a release. So Let's start with the first question, Mr. Clardy. How has your incarceration impacted your children?
Thank you for asking. My relationship with my children, it has been, to be quite honest, it has been like severely strained. The communication with them is the biggest. They were 3, 4, 5, and 6 when I was incarcerated. In 2008. So even though we do communicate a lot, I've made sure, you know, to still play that dad role and stay in their lives throughout my incarceration. Mm-hmm. But my oldest son, who was 6, he has memories of me, you know, from when I was home. So our relationship is the strongest. And my son, who was 5, you know, he vaguely remembers me. But my youngest two, who were 3 and 4, they don't remember me at all. And you know, those two are the ones that I have the hardest time connecting with. Like I said, you know, they know I'm dead. They know I'm there for them. They know that, you know, they can ask me anything. We can talk about anything. But still, you know, I noticed that we don't have that normal relationship that we would have, mm-hmm. you know, had I been, you know, home. But I will stay at the same token, though. You know, I know that a lot of times incarceration, that does seem to have adverse impacts on children, you know, as far as academically and, you know, behavior-wise. And I can honestly say that that has not been the case with my children. I mean, my oldest two, they graduated high school. My youngest son is about to graduate this year. He'll be starting college in the fall. Mm. And my daughter, she's mm-hmm. an honor student, and she'll be graduating next year, and she's planning on going to college as well. Like, none of them are in the streets. They don't do drugs. They, you know, they're not in gangs, you know, stuff like that. So mm-hmm. I'm, you know, regardless of the, you know, the communication strain, I'm proud that they're still turning out to be, you know, good kids.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Absolutely. So take us a little bit back. We want to go back a little bit, too, as in regards to the case. Now, we don't have to elaborate so much onto the case, but we want to point out the sentencing as to the purpose and reason why advocates have joined in with you. We are joining in with you, as well as your family, in regards to the over sentencing and how that has impacted you.
Yes. Well, they, I believe it was in February 2009. I was sentenced to 5 life terms plus 53 years in prison. And I actually, at that time, I had the most time out of everyone in the jail. And I mean, and this is not to minimize. I mean, I did commit those robberies. I wasn't the type of person who was just out there just, you know, who didn't want to work, who just, you know, tried to take the easy way out by wanting to rob people. That mm-hmm. wasn't the case mm-hmm. at all. I had just gotten into like I had just gotten out of the military and I was in college at the time and I was working. But things just sort of hit me all at once. I mean, my car got totaled in a flood. And without mm-hmm. my transportation, I lost my job. I ended up being evicted from my apartment. And I couldn't pay my tuition. So, you know, my registration was put on hold and everything just kind of bombarded me within a few months span. And that was when I made that bad decision to try to get some money. I decided to, you know, to commit those 3 robberies that I did. But at the same token, I didn't feel like, you know, I'm in jail with guys who have committed murders and, you know, rapes. And again, not to minimize what I did, but I felt like there's no way I should have 5 life terms in prison, you know, more time than people who I know mm-hmm. have, you know, committed, you know, some pretty heinous things. Mm-hmm. And people who have lived lifestyles that, you know, I wasn't a part of. So that was the main thing that caused people to, you know, step in and start supporting me, because I've just always been known, you know, I'm not, I did a bad thing, but I've never been a bad person. You know, I've never been, mm-hmm. Lived a street lifestyle. You know, I've never been in a gang. I've never, you know, been a drug abuser. I've never been the type of person who was just, you know, a drag on society who needed to be banished from society for, you know, the rest of my life. So I'm thankful that, you know, my family and advocates, you know, were able to see that, to see the good in me. And say we're gonna mm-hmm. help. We're gonna fight for this guy. Help him get, you know, get some relief.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, because you know, back then and now and what have you, and things. 2009 is not that far back, and you know, I kind of understand the concept. You know, even though it was some robberies that were committed or issues that was going on, but no one died by your hand or what have you. And so I guess that's the reason why everybody is trying to wrap their knowledge around the fact as to why the judge would be so harsh in his sentencing at that time. So even with that being said, what are some of the improvements that you have made even while being incarcerated that even could be able to shed even more light on your case as trying to improve as a citizen?
I've dedicated from day one. I told myself that, you know, regardless of what, you know, the names that they were calling me in the media and in the courtroom, you know, saying I'm a monster and I'm a menace, I told myself from day one that I was not going to allow them to define me, because mm-hmm. I know myself to be, you know, someone who, I don't value crime. I don't value being a gangster or a thug. I've always been a type who value accomplishments. You know, that's why I joined the military. And, you know, when I got out, decided, you know, try to earn my degree. I value, you know, advancing in life. You know, I'm sort of ambitious. And so mm-hmm. I told myself from the moment, you know, from day one that I was going to continue being who I am. And so mm-hmm. I've, over the course of my incarceration, I've completed about 36 different classes, college classes, vocational, financial literacy classes, spiritual courses, rehabilitation, and I've earned college credits. I've earned a few certificates, some technical certifications. I've written 2 fiction novels. One of them is published on Amazon. Mm-hmm. It's called The Check Game, and it's written under my pen name, which is Kingpin. P-E-N. And I have another novel that I haven't gotten the time to publish yet. And I've also, I've gotten heavily into, you know, human rights and social justice. And I've written articles that have been published by the Virginia Prison Justice Network, the Virginia Prisons Accountability Committee, Hamilton College, Toxin Magazine, and probably a few other places I can't think of right now. And I also have a column on there's a human rights organization called Interfaith Action for Human Rights. They've graciously allowed me a column for me to write on prison issues in their monthly newsletter. I've been writing this for them for since 2016. And I just write on different issues such as solitary confinement, prison medical care, how new laws are applied to prisoners, things of that nature, just to give advocates an inside perspective to help them in their work. I've remained free of infractions because there are already no rules in prison, so I kind of liken that to laws in society. So, you know, I don't break any of these rules. I've remained free of infractions throughout my incarceration. And currently, I'm currently creating a manual for incarcerated veterans. That's kind of like a project I'm working on. And I want it to primarily be like a guide on the principles that were instilled in us during our service, such as, you know, being disciplined, following orders, making sound decisions, communication, the importance of respect, honor, and integrity. And I also wanted to include information on, you know, Veterans Affairs resources for healthcare, education benefits, employment programs, things that a lot of veterans may not have been privy to when we were transitioning from the military to civilian life. And, you know, those are some of the reasons that some of us ended up incarcerated, because we weren't really aware of the resources that were available to us. So my goal is to put together a manual for veterans, you know, try to get it in the hands of every incarcerated veteran, at least in the state. And hopefully, if I can get the support, you know, get it done nationwide. But I'm just, you know, I'm just trying to be, you know, be productive and do what I can, you know, to be helpful and have some kind of impact.
Absolutely, absolutely. That is wonderful. Okay, so we're gonna shift gears in regards to mental health. And we know that sometimes when we hear mental health, or when we say mental health, that does not mean that the person is schizophrenic. Sometimes depression, you know, it's also classified as mental health. And so we want to talk about what role did this play in your behavior leading up to you committing these crimes. And I want to say this is not something where it's like judgmental, simply because of the fact that we know the judge, what's his name? I think it's Judge I can't think of his name. It's on the tip of my tongue, but Judge Mathis. Mathis is the first African American. Yeah, he was incarcerated too. He was in gangs. There was a lot, and there was lots of individuals that have been incarcerated. They have been exonerated. They've came out. We see it on social media, which I do, and they have turned their lives around and became attorneys. And so I
Absolutely.
Think that is a very, very powerful thing that you're doing, still trying to help individuals while you are still behind bars. Because, if you know, even though they say that you're a monster, what is going to define that is how you're making an impact even while you are incarcerated. That removes the stigmatism of what they are saying. Even though it may be a monster in their eyesight, I'm pretty sure everybody is called a monster when they're behind bars or they get sentenced to 20 or 30 or 40 years or what have you. But a
exactly.
lot of these guys that are coming out, yeah, absolutely. A lot of these guys that are coming out and being released, they're turning these things over into radio shows. They're becoming authors. They're taking their pain and putting it into purpose. So what role did poor mental health play in your behavior leading up to you committing these issues and crimes?
Shortly before I was discharged from the military, I began having like hallucinations. It's hard for me to. I was having thoughts that God wanted me to kill myself.
Okay.
But yeah, it's kind of uncomfortable.
I kind of know where you're coming from and stuff. A lot of times, now watch this. A lot of times when we're down at the bottom, We know we got to feed our family. We know we got to get them lights turned on. We know we're trying to prevent certain things from happening. All types of things come into our mindset. So with the words that you're trying to put into play, don't think that it's something that's crazy or wild and far-fetched and things like that. All of us have had certain dilemmas to cross our mindset or what have you and things. So you can be able to answer that into the way that, you know, all of us understand. We understand.
Yes.
You know, so go ahead.
Sir. Okay. What happened, I had ended up going to see the chaplain on the ship that I was stationed on. And, you know, I had a good talk with the chaplain, and he recommended that I see a psychiatrist. And, I told the psychiatrist about, you know, the thoughts I was having and, you know, how my behavior was starting to change. I mean, at one point I was so suicidal that I was going to jump off the ship. And some of my shipmates, you know, they came and got me. And so the psychiatrist, he diagnosed me with what was called adjustment disorder. And he made a few notations that, you know, that my thinking and judgment was impaired. And he recommended that I be sent back to the Naval Hospital for further treatment and assessment. But that never happened. This was like very close to when I was due to be discharged from the military anyway. And so I just was allowed to just get out of the military without the treatment. And I never received any treatment or counseling for it. And I wasn't even aware of the actual, you know, clinical diagnosis of adjustment disorder. I just thought that, you know, I saw the psychiatrist and I was okay. And it wasn't until later that I learned, I mean, throughout my incarceration, that I learned how, you know, certain triggers can further impact certain types of mental health disorders that you have. And as far as adjustment disorder, extreme financial hardship is a trigger that can, you know, sort of cause you to regress. And I didn't realize at the time that was what was happening. You know, when I started, you know, because I would have never been the type of person who, you know, just because I'm experiencing some financial hardship that I'm not the type to say, well, let me go and commit a crime now. You know, that wasn't my way of thinking. But you know, the more I understand about adjustment disorder and how, you know, how it can impair your thinking and your judgment, when I was going through that hardship, you know, and you know, that combined with this mental illness that I didn't quite understand, that played a role in, you know, me deciding to make that jump from, you know, me being a law-abiding citizen who had never broken the law. I mean, I had like 2 speeding tickets. You know, from being this good guy to, you know, jumping at the snap of a finger to let me go and rob somebody. I knew that that wasn't, you know, even now I know that's not me. You know, that's not how I've ever rationally thought about things. And so, you know, just understanding more about adjustment disorder and, you know, my need to get treatment for it, you know, that's been something that's been on my mind throughout my incarceration. And I know that when I am released, you know, I'm definitely going to have to, you know, seek further treatment and counseling for that.
Absolutely, because you said the right exact word, when you are released. Because, you know, a lot of times people, they'll give up. They have a, I mean, I talk to offenders all the time, you know, they'd be on a roller coaster, they'd be down, they'd be up. They be down, then they be up, and then, you know, you can't base your case about what the system says. You have to base your case upon, you know, upon facts and what have you. So in regards to that, define the word clemency. Some people may not even know what that means. Some people may not even know what that stands for or the purpose of it. So define for us what clemency is and the reason why that you are seeking a clemency on your case.
Okay, so clemency is basically you're asking for mercy. It is basically you're petitioning, if you're a state inmate, then you're petitioning the governor of your state. You're asking him for mercy. If you believe that, you know, you've been over sentenced or that there was something in your case to where you're asking him for a second chance. It's not necessarily you're saying that there are legal grounds You're just, you know, asking him, you know, can you give me a second chance to you know, to return to society and prove that I can be better, be a better person. And it is completely up to the governor, you know, whether or not he and it's actually, you know, very rare and very hard to get, you know, it's very rare that they grant clemency to people. But the reason why I'm seeking it is because, you know, as we've already discussed, you know, I was sentenced. I don't even think harsh is the word. I was, you know, given a very extreme sentence. And, yeah. You know, as a first time offender who, you know, I'm not an angel, you know, but I'm not a demon either. You know, I'm a regular human who I tried, you know, I tried to live a good life out there. You know, I married the mother of my children. You know, I finished school. I served my country. I sought a higher education. I worked. I paid taxes. You know, I wasn't the type of person who society should say we didn't just get rid of him. And I do think that, you know, my background prior to being incarcerated and, you know, just with me understanding that, you know, how me breaking the law was in some way influenced by poor mental health. And so I'm seeking clemency, and my advocates are, you know, trying to help me get clemency because we do believe that, I mean, I've been in prison for 13 years at this point. The national average sentence for robbery is 9 years. So I've done that, you know, more than the average sentence, you know, for robbery. And you know, I mean, I've done time. I've, you know, tried to be productive throughout my incarceration. You know, just to show, you know, just try to continue showing that I am a good person and, you know, not to say that I deserve clemency, but what I want people to know is that I'm trying to earn it. You know, I'm trying to earn clemency. I'm trying to earn America's support, you know, the public support for my clemency.
Right.
So that's basically, you know, it's just asking for a second chance.
Okay, and absolutely, and so it's a lot of things that I want to say, and I'm going to bring it out right here on this broadcast. Who cares? So with the mental poor health issue, I feel that could be contributed to the military. We have had family members ourselves have went to the military. It's different. You're in a different land. You're in a different country. You're away from home. You're away from your parents, you're away from your children, you're away from your wife, you're away from civilization that has been accustomed to you on a daily basis. And so we have had some individuals, several of them, that have been in the same situation. I think they were in the Air Force and the Navy. They go and they come back and they're different. And so military, some things does perhaps maybe bring about change upon a person's mindset. And so that's something that, you know, you may need to look at right there, you know, even in regards to your case, in regards to your crime and what have you. Number two, now I'm giving out advice. Number two, it could, you know, a lot of times we don't research the judge. So take, for instance, and what I'm going to say in regards to that, when it comes down to the judge, sometimes we have to research them, okay? So in our neck of the woods, which I'm not going to call any names, we're not here to call any names on the show. So when I used to work for the federal system along with the U.S. Marshals some years ago, and so we would take the offenders. My specialty was in transportation, and so when we would take them there, the judge had went through some trauma with his daughter. I'm not for sure actually what happened. I don't know if she died, but I know she OD'd. I don't know if she's still living today. So what he did was it angered him. And so everybody that came through his courtroom that had was drug sellers and what have you, he threw the book at them. That's prejudice. Mm-hmm. That's bias.
Oh, yes.
And so I think we need to, you know, be thinking about that. Research the judge, see what his specifics were as to, you know, what he liked and what he don't like and what have you, and then see how that compels to your case and others' case as to how they're feeling. Sometimes people will abuse their authority. They will abuse it.
Absolutely.
They'll go over the guidelines. and it won't have anything to do. It won't have anything to do with the case. It's just they're going off of their own emotional feelings, and they cannot do that. There's a gap somewhere that's there that somebody just has to find it. It's a gap somewhere in this case with you, and somebody has to find it. And I know you have a team, and I know all things work together for the good of those who love the Lord and things like that. And you know, we continue to pray and ask the Lord that he will find and put that link together, because that's not even excessive. There is not even a word that's in the dictionary that constitute as to the sentencing for this, especially when no one even perished or died from it. So, you know, there's a lot of options that you can look into. Another thing that that I would like to say, too, is, you know, a lot of individuals, I was telling one individual who we were helping him out and what have you, but it was just not enough goals. You know, I need you to help me to get a reduction in my sentencing, commutation with my sentencing. Okay, you want to get a reduction, but the individual was still doing some things while they were incarcerated. Plus, at the same time, I said, "What if I write a compassionate letter to the governor in regards on your behalf, what is it that I could be able to say to the governor or to the judge or to your to someone who can be able to reopen your case or consider a time reduction?" This individual gonna come and tell, gonna say something to me like, in quotation marks, "Oh, I got a welding job lined up when I get out." I said, "Yeah, you and 5 million others." I said, you have to do something else a little bit, you know. You think the man gonna open up this door for you, and just because you got a welding job waiting on you on that? And so the same things that you are doing, that's what I had mentioned to him. I said, you gonna have to make an impact. You gonna have to go. Mm-hmm. You gonna have to show that governor that you are concerned about making change. You need to go to that governor. I mean, you need to be working on some things while you're incarcerated so the governor can look at you. He don't care anything about how many certificates you got. You need to be working on the fact, like I told, this is what I'm telling him. I said, you need to be working on the fact of how can you can be able to change some things while you're there. You can write a newsletter to the children at the local high school or something like that. You're not going to go in there and want the governor to look at your portfolio, and only thing you can tell them that you got a welding job waiting on you when you get out. And it was just so many things came through my mind when I just lit him up like a firecracker.
And hopefully he appreciated that. Hopefully he appreciated that, because sometimes people need to hear, you know, the truth. You know, I run across guys in here all the time who say the same thing, that they filed a clemency petition. They filed a clemency petition. And I always ask guys, like, what are you doing to, you know, to convince not only the governor to grant your petition, but also to convince people to support you? Because you need support. Right. You need advocacy. And I, you know, I see guys, you know, here who say, "Man, well, I filed it," and they're still running around, you know, catching infractions and, you know, doing drugs and, you know, not going to school and things of that nature, and you know, not accomplishing things. And like I said, I've never, you know, from day one, I knew that it is a very rare, it's almost a miracle to be granted clemency. And so I know that if this governor is going to put his political career on the line, you know, by releasing me from prison early, because that is something that, you know, if you grant someone clemency and they were to get out and commit a crime, you know, that can that backlash can come on them. You know, let's say they want to run for senator. Well, their opposition can say, "Well, when you were governor, you let this guy out and he committed another crime." You know, that can mess up their political career. So I know that if I want to, you know, convince this person to, you know, give me another chance, I have to show him that I'm worthy of it. You know, I can't say that, you know, when I get out, I'm going to do this. I know that it starts right now. You know, my changed behavior, you know, me showing remorse, you know, to the people who I offended, that stuff starts right now. And, you know, I understand that, you know, so I make it a point every day when I wake up, you know, I ask myself, who am I going to be? am I going to be better than I was yesterday, or am I going to, you know, regress?
Wow.
And, you know, yeah. I made sure I continue to just be better. You know, every day I want to be better than I was yesterday.
Mhm, mhm. Absolutely, that is awesome. So we're going to talk about real quick about your support team. Talk about, share with us how important it is to have someone to believe in you. Talk to us a little bit about your advocacy team, those that are helping you to fight for justice, those that are coming to your rescue, coming to your aid. How does that impact you?
It is. It's absolutely vital because. The thing about it, you know, once you are an offender, you're an offender. And it's kind of hard to convince people otherwise, even through your actions,
okay.
You know. So you have to show people. It'll be different if, you know, if you were to, you know, say, you know, Governor Northam, I've gotten to know Mr. Clardy and I believe him to be this, you know, a changed individual. That's going to mean a whole mm-hmm. lot more than me simply telling the governor, you know, me trying to convince him that I'm a changed individual. It has to come from, you know, it's a lot more impactful when it comes from the people advocating for you. And so thankfully I've, you know, gotten, you know, nationwide a team of advocates who have come on board, you know, to support me and to advocate for me. First and foremost, Mrs. Kira Moore, I know you remember her. She was the one who came on board on the podcast we did last time. She is my main advocate. She actually came on board in 2017 with her organization, the Redemptive Life Foundation. They actually filed my petition for clemency to the governor on my behalf. And, you know, they've also, you know, created social media pages and a website to help raise awareness of my clemency efforts. Like they, you know, that's my main advocacy source right there. Also, Dr. Kelly Brotzman, who is the former executive director for the Martin Richard Institute of Social Justice at Bridgewater State. She is a very well-renowned criminal justice reform advocate. She was also one of my former college professors. She has written several clemency support letters on my behalf. She's reached out directly to legislators on my behalf. She's kept in contact with me over the years and just been a mentor. She's very much in my corner. And also, you know, I have, you know, different organizations like Virginia Cure, Georgetown University Law Center, Critical Resistance, the Coalition for Justice, the Prison Policy Initiative, the Coalition for Prisoners' Rights, Social Action Linking Together, Veterans Consultation Services, so many different organizations that have written letters to Governor Northam urging him to grant me clemency. Also, Interfaith Action for Human Rights, the organization that allows me to write my newsletter, my column in their newsletters, you know, they're one of my biggest supporters. They've reached out to the governor on my behalf. They raise awareness also through their newsletter to get their readers to support my petition. Reform the Freedom Ministries, you know, I can't forget you guys, you know, for allowing me this platform
for
me to share with the public, you know, who I truly am. You know, just friends, you know, friends, family, community members, even strangers who have learned about my story and just felt compelled to show their support by writing letters to the governor and signing my online petition. To my count, I try to keep count of it as much as I can, but that's more so my advocates. But to my knowledge, I've gotten over 70-something letters that have been mailed to the governor, you know, urging him to support my petition. And I also have a petition online on change.org that has gotten a couple thousand signatures. But, you know, just, you know, people who I learned about my story, you know, who are, you know, reaching out to the governor for me, it means a whole lot. It means a whole lot.
Absolutely. And sometimes you just have to continue to fight. I love the new detectives, Forensic Files, Cold Case Files, FBI Files. I love those. And so last night I was watching a segment in regards to proof of innocence. And so what happened was this: it was three cases, and in each different case, these guys were sentenced to long-term sentencing. And so they kept fighting. They kept writing. They kept fighting. One guy had spent, I think, 17 years behind prison bars, but he wrote over 1,000 letters trying to free himself, and he finally got it. One guy, I think he was incarcerated in 2009, and I don't know what happened. I think his wife had had like an aneurysm or something like that, and she pointed him out and said he was the one that did it. Come to find out, it was not him. There was no DNA to connect him to it, but he continued to fight. And that's what you have to continue to do. Even if there is no one else around, whether it's Reform to Freedom Ministries, whether it's with any other organization, long as Marquis continues to fight. That's you're your first advocate going in. And so, you know, I applaud you for that. You know, still just keep writing them. Whatever you have to do, just keep doing the same thing. And we never know. It may not be this governor. God may turn it around a different way where he may send someone else with a fresh pair of eyes to be able to say, hey, you know what? This is ludicrous. This doesn't make no sense. We're going to run this case right back into court. And we're not talking about no 5 years down the road and what have you. We're talking about something that's soon to come. And so we always keep an open mind, as to what can be able to change tomorrow, the next 30 minutes, the next hour. And so these guys, all of them, they freed themselves. I think they may have had some individuals to support them, but they were the main advocate themselves. They wrote the letters. Even if they didn't let any grass grow under their feet, they kept, you know, doing whatever they needed to do to be able to make the message plain to the public that they were innocent. So let's jump to, we got a couple more questions. And so what would you say to your victims? And I'm going to say this. Usually with a person that has had and received as much prison time as you have received, you would see a whole dossier online about your case. But it's not like that with your case. It's really kind of like a small summary. And I was like, okay, so if the summary is small, then this guy really didn't do anything. Why is the sentence so heavy? And so, and even though with the victims may say one thing and what have you and things like that, but what would you say to them today, you know, in regards to, you know, what transpired back then? You know, it seems like you have owned up to your issues. You have drinked your medicine. You know, that's my whole thing. My thing is, as long as a person drinks and take their medicine, that's good. So what would you say to those that you may have crossed the line the incorrect way? What would you say to them today?
I would tell them, and I would hope that they would understand, I would tell them how much I want to make them proud. And I know that might sound weird, you know, because I want to make my mother proud. I want to make my children proud. But I feel like saying I apologize for what I did is not good enough. I feel like, you know, there's no words I can say to convey my remorse. And so I feel like the best way that I can show them how genuinely remorseful I am is you know, by constantly striving to be better and do better. And they may never know this, but I mean, I would give anything for them to know how much they motivate me to be a better person. That's what I would really want them to know. You know, that is my constant motivation. Like me remembering, you know, what I did, my actions, how I conducted myself to them. I want to get, you know, I want them to know, you know, like, because that is the only me that they know. You know, when they think of Marquis Claudia, they think of a person who robbed them. And so in their minds, that's who I am. But I know that that's not who I am, you know, and so I want them to know who I really am. You know, I'm not that person. And so I try hard, you know, that is the number one thing that motivates me to keep, you know, regardless of anything else, regardless if I end up spending the rest of my life in prison, I'm still going to wake up every day wanting to be better. because in my mind, I feel like they're watching me. You know, I feel like, you know, in my mind, you know, their eyes are on me. And so I want to be, every decision I make, I want to make the right decision, because in somewhere in my mind, you know, I want them to know, you know, that he is a good guy. He's a nice guy, you know. He's not this bad guy that, you know, that's not the totality of who he is, this guy who committed this crime against me, you know. So, I mean, it's kind of hard to even describe, but I just would want them to know that, you know, that they will forever, you know, motivate me to keep striving to be better, you know, just be the best version of myself I can be for them.
Okay. Okay, great. So what would you say to your children today? I know you mentioned earlier that you talk to them, all the time and what have you, and things like that. They're coming out of school, they're coming out of college, they're going into college, some of them are, and what have you. They have a positive future ahead of them still today. At this moment, what would you say to your children?
I tell them all the time, you know, that it only takes that one time, you know, because a lot of people, you know, have it misconstrued that, you know, you have to be a gangster, or you have to, you know, be a career criminal to you know, for them to put you in prison for the rest of your life. And that is just not the case at all. You know, there's so many mandatory, you know, there are some really harsh laws. And that's one thing I make sure my sons understand, is that, you know, number one, being, and I don't want to make this a racial issue, but, you know, it is a fact, you know, being a black male in America does not bode well for you in the eyes of the criminal justice system, because I believe that statistically, like, one of every three black men will experience incarceration at some point. And so being that I have three sons, you know, I told them at a young age that statistically one of y'all will be incarcerated. And of course, I don't want it to be either one of them, but I made sure to put that in their minds so that they will always be conscious of it, and so that they will always have it in their mind that, well, it's not going to be me, because if they always believe it's not going to be me, then it will never be one of them, you know. So I made sure that they're very conscious, not only of, you know, not breaking the law, but also of what their priorities should be. Because my father was not in my life growing up. So I made sure that everything I wasn't taught, you know, I made sure my kids, they say I preach a lot. And they say it in a bad way, like, Dad, you're always preaching. But I understand that I have to preach to y'all, you know. I have to make sure, you know, I would rather you say I preach a lot than to say my dad wasn't there. My dad didn't tell me this. You know, I'm cool with being the one who preaches a lot, because, you know, you're getting this message whether you want it or not. And so I've been telling them since they were, you know, since they were young enough to where they didn't even understand it, that their priorities are God, their education, and their career. Well, school, but, you know, but then their career. And you know, that is just the main thing. I made sure they, you know, understand where their priorities should be, God, family, education. And also, you know, understanding the laws, you know, understanding that, you know, don't think that you can get away with something, because all it really takes, you know, I made sure that they know that my life and my story, you know, made sure that is a testament to how it really only takes that one time, you know. You know, they know, you know, I was a law-abiding citizen who, you know, again, I tried to, you know, do the right thing, and I really was striving. And, you know, that one bad decision, and here it is 13 years later, I'm still sitting in prison for that one bad decision. So I just make sure they understand that, you know, just to always stay on their toes, and, you know, just always make the right decisions so that they, you know, their story won't end up like mine or anywhere near it.
Absolutely, absolutely. Because I you know, even with all of the things that are going on today, with, you know, a lot of the protests, the injustices that are going on, the main thing about it is obey the law. Obey the law. Listen to the law. Some things, sometimes some individuals have obeyed the law. Sometimes it still turned out fatal for the person that was perhaps maybe trying to be apprehended or what have you. But at the end of the day, That's the best, one of the best tools. Especially, you know, you know, as a parent, we don't teach children from things 50 years ago. We're not living in 50, you know, we're not living in the other century. We're living in today's time. So what's going on today is, you know, we have to teach our children to respect the law. You know,
exactly.
And as you know, as what my son's dad and father always have taught them, it's easy to get into something trouble, and it's hard to get out of something trouble.
Oh,
it's hard to get out of trouble.
Yeah.
Easy to get into trouble, and so and so, you know, just to do a quick summary and recap of what we have shared and discussed on today. Mr. Clardy, and that's one, you know, you were detailing out information in regards to your case. You also came in and offered up, you know, apologies and heartfelt testimonies in regards to the victims that were, you know, in regards to your situation and your issues. I hate to use the word crime simply because of the fact that I feel that when a person renews him or herself, it's different. You know, the terms become different. And so you did that. And then we also discussed about the programs that you were working on and have achieved and you continue to achieve and some publications that you are still working on, trying to help other individuals in the community, still trying to help people in the state, still trying to help individuals in the prison, and also trying to even help your own children through the mistakes and some of the issues of the past that you may have went down that was not you know, the appropriate choices at that time. We also talked about a little bit about mental health, which I think that is also important in regards to some of the our actions as to how we behave, how we decide on certain things, whether to turn left and turn right, you know, and even on the first show that you had discussed, you know, it was some things that came up, you know, you're trying to feed your family, you were trying to do different things and what have you, and just some things kind of got misconstrued. And we also shared about military, sometimes even with that, that can also be a mental challenge within itself by itself. We're not even going to talk about the issue. We're not even going to talk bringing in about the crime. It's just the mental part of being in the military that can be a mental issue as well. I can't name them, but there are several of my family members and what have you. They left out one way with a good knowledge and mindset, and they came back another way, even though they may didn't end up in the judicial system, but still they came back in a very disturbed mental factor. They were very, very disturbed and probably wish they probably were. They probably wish they had committed a crime because they were really disoriented when they returned, and they remained that way until death. And so, you know, getting some counseling, talking to individuals is very, very important, and I think that reading also helps water the mind. We also talked about your supporters. We talked about your prison advocates, those that have supported you down through the years since you have been incarcerated in regards to these issues that have came up. And we also talked about how sometimes judicial officers can be biased and prejudiced. They will judge according to personal experiences rather than the law. And so it's a website, and I can't even think of the link as of right now. I think we may have it on our website, or you may can remember it, but there is a website that all offenders can be able to go to and non-offenders can go to make sure that the judicial system is sentencing them according to the guidelines. And I think it's USAA.gov or something like that, but I know that that's a platform where individuals can be able to go and make sure that the judicial system has given a fair trial and term as to how they have handed down their sentencing. And we also talked about how you shared some things about the people that you know, that you offended and, you know, and how you would love to make it up to them, you know, by trying to strive better. And then you also talked about as well as to how you could be able to be a better person once this commutation comes into effect. We're believing that someone will eventually pick up the case, which we know that we are looking at the case. You have advocates that are looking at the case, but I'm talking about a fresh, keen pair of eyes that can be able to change change some things around where they can say, well, you know what, we think that this right here maybe needs a little bit going over. And so we just wanted to be able to do that recap, and you can be able to share with the audiences how they can be able to perhaps maybe follow any of the publications that you may have out there or any books that you have written. You can do that at this time.
Okay. The book that I've written, it is a fiction novel, and you can buy that on Amazon. The name of it is The Check Game, and the pen name that I write on it is Kingpen, and it is Kingpen. Sort of a play on words that I'm, you know, the king when it comes to the ink pen. I just thought that was my outlet when I was writing. And so you can find my book there. And also, if you guys can follow the Instagram page that my supporters made for me, it is we_support_marquee. And also, you guys can visit our website, which is www.wesupportmarquee.com. And I would also ask you guys if you could support my petition that I have on change.org. And the link is change.org/secondchanceformarquee. And that is Marquee spelled M-A-R-Q-U-I. And if you go to my Instagram, to the Instagram page, there's a link, I believe, where they call it a link tree, where there's different links in there to where you can read some of the publications that I have that I've been published online. I haven't been able to see it myself, okay. But I'm told that it's like a they say they call it a landing page.
Hashtag or something like that? You want to say like a hashtag?
Yes.
Okay.
Not a hashtag. They say it's a website where there's nothing but links to other websites. I've been in here so long, I don't understand the concept of it. But I'm told that if you were to go to my Instagram page, that it's in there. It's on the Instagram profile. And when you click it, it'll take you right to the links to all of my other writings and, you know, my petition and things of that nature. So I would definitely ask you guys, you know, if you can support, you know, every little bit of support helps. You know, even if you just only sign, you know, click my petition and, you know, add your signature there, you know, that'll help go a long way toward, because as Ms. Winbush stated, you know, the more public support that we have on these issues, the more the governor or the decision makers are inclined to grant, you know, the petitions or to give it a second look. So I would just, you know, thank you guys for listening to my story, and if you guys could support, you know, that'll be a great thing. And
okay, great. So thank you so much, Mr. Claudio, for being our guest on today. And, of course, you know we're going to be staying up on top of your case and on top of your story. And, of course, with the new publication with Reform to Freedom Ministries, I think the one that may be coming up in June, I think that you are on that one, if I'm not mistaken. And so we're going to do everything that we can on our end to be able to help your advocacy team to be able to shine light and highlight anything that you need for the public to be able to know even about your case. So thank you so much for being our guest on today. So for our audience, of course, you can go to our website to learn more about us at reform2freedomministries.org. Take care, Mr. Claudio, and you have a great day.
Okay, you too. Thank you for the opportunity.
You're welcome.